Is there anything else I should be telling High Priest Nevis when I report to him next 7 day?
I would be more worried about whether you'll get to report to him, Abbas.
I came through Verity on my return, and I took the time to listen at several important corners.
Glass knew that meant places no nun had any right to be.
And?
The Inquisition is coming to Sweet Mercy.
Chapter 11. Nona hobbled down the rock-hewn steps to the Shade Chamber. Parts of her that she did not remember being struck had stiffened and now protested at each movement. She took the last steps with both hands to the wall, teeth gritted, sweat sticking her undershirt to her flesh. All of Mystic Class looked towards the door when she entered, some stares narrow-eyed and accusatory, others wondering.
Nona, good of you to join us.
Sister Apple watched her without expression from the front of the class. She had a hat and scarf in her hands. Your tardiness has volunteered you to spend your study period on 3rd day helping me with Red Class. We're brewing wretchweed.
Nona knew better than to argue. She hobbled across to sit by Darla, wretchweed distilled to a liquid that could rapidly induce vomiting and diarrhea. The smell of the stuff sometimes had the same effect. It was always a messy lesson.
You look like you fell off the rock.
Darla shuffled up.
Nona looked around. Neither Ilani nor Joelle were there. Croce sat haunched over her notes, one eye black and swollen to a slit, a bruise covering most of the other side of her face.
Today we're returning to the subject of disguise, Nona.
Sister Apple held the hat aloft, a shapeless thing of dark felt such as a market stall holder might wear.
Which is particularly appropriate as you're up next for the Shade Trial.
Nona started to open her mouth in protest, then clamped it shut. Each mystic novice took the challenge every year. Nobody graduating to Holy Class without a successful trial could entertain hopes of becoming a Sister of Discretion. Without a shadow, Nona had no chance of that, really, so it was good that she'd set her heart on the red.
Disguise, Sister Apple said, is as much about changing your mind as about changing your appearance. I was taught by Sister Pepper. Yes, you've heard of her. Sister Pepper could, with nothing more than a simple grey tunic, or brown if you turned it inside out, pass convincingly at the gates of a dozen high houses and guild halls in Verity. I suspect she could have gained admittance to half of them wearing a sack. Sister Pepper knew in her heart of hearts that she belonged in each of those places. She knew who she was, why she was going, what to expect inside, and precisely how much attention to pay to those whose job it was to stop her. The body speaks its own language, and Sister Pepper could use hers to say whatever she needed it to.
Nona stared at the hat, which was moving with Sister Apple's hand as she made her points. Nona had never had a talent for acting or imitation. Ruli could sound like any of the mistresses. She zeroed in on their particular affectations and habits, exaggerating them to a degree that made novices laugh hard enough to wet themselves. It was like an ear for music. Nona lacked the talent.
We will speak of fuller disguises in later classes. Learning how to maintain an outfit or uniform and how to wear it is as important as getting the color and number of buttons correct in the first place. However, even if you disguise yourself with a sufficiency of paint to resemble a section of wall, down to the smallest detail, a nervous wall that thinks it does not belong will be discovered and stabbed, whereas a confident wall that knows her place and duty, that thinks wall thoughts and loves her bricks, will be fine. Trust me on this.
Sister Apple began to demonstrate a variety of gaits, from shuffling to bold.
As a sister of discretion, novices, a limp can save your life. People as a whole see very little and remember less. Imagine you limp your way through a market and stray close to a certain high official out in his furs and chain of office, his guards close at hand. Say that magistrate pats his inner pocket for the ninth time, checking on the important papers he is to bring before some still higher authority. And they're gone. Suddenly, he remembers the woman who stumbled against him. The momentary brush of contact. Stop her, he yells. Stop who? He struggles for detail. And all he can remember, all any of them can remember with surety, is she had a limp. And of course now you don't. You're strolling away bolder than brass, head up. And not directly away, but at a tangent that says you haven't a care in the world. Nona's thoughts wandered away rather like the hypothetical novice in the market, and led her to Thabor Square. On at least a quarter of 7 days, the Shea trial kept the novices of mystic class from the chaperoned distractions of Verity's markets or family visits, hemming them instead into the broadness of Thabor Square. By all accounts, it wasn't too harsh an imposition. The square was popular with the merchant classes, and many a well-dressed couple would promenade there, browsing the small number of licensed stalls and exchanging pleasantries. Older folk with good coin would play dominoes or chess on hired boards at tables around the perimeter. Nona's goal would be to reach the spreading pine at the center of the square without being challenged by the novices on patrol. Reaching the pine would be nigh impossible. If she made it, everyone on guard wouldn't get to eat for 2 days. But the novices couldn't afford to just challenge anyone who approached. An incorrect challenge lost everyone on guard a meal. Reaching the tree would be enough to continue being considered as a candidate for the grey. For top marks, though, you had to not only reach the tree unchallenged, but recover the puzzle box hidden high in its branches. If you did that, the guards missed meals for 3 days. The full task was to open the box as well. But you would have to be invisible to sit in the tree, fiddling with the box long enough to open it, and still not be challenged. So Nona was not surprised to hear that none of the poisoner's graduates had managed it. "Zoe can be first," Sister Apple's voice cut through Nona's imaginings. Zoe got to her feet, scowling, as the poisoner beckoned her to the front. Sister Apple offered her a smile in return. "Now, Zoe, tell me how much you love to dance." She raised a hand to forestall the objection. "And while you sell me the lie, also convince me, without using words, that you're a native of Verity born to a merchant family of moderate wealth." In that moment, the nun's accent so mirrored that of Zoe and Yisht that Nona could believe her born on the ice and raised for 30 years without sight of green.
"I live to dance."
Zoe spoke through gritted teeth, tightening each word into something that sounded more like a Dernish sailor in pain than any subject of the Emperor, let alone one of Verity's moneyed class.
"Dancing is my pleasure."
"Hmm," Sister Apple nodded. "And do you favor the Chatra or the Mouse Step?" Darla elbowed Nona while the Ice Triber ground out her replies as though they were death threats.
"Even Zoe stands a better chance than you in the Shade Trial."
She pointed to her eyes with index and forefinger.
"Joelie's going to organize a defense around that tree that Annoy Gwyn couldn't get through. And with those peepers of yours, 2 street kids would be enough to spot you before you got within 10 yards. "Pay attention, Nona. You're next."
Sister Apple snapped her fingers.
"And Zoe, that was terrible. You may never have an ear for accents, but you can at least learn to lie more convincingly. Next class, you will convince me of your love for dancing, or I will convince you that your defenses against poisoning are still inadequate.
Here's my tip. In your mind, substitute something that you love for the thing you hate. Clearly, you're not a devotee of music and self-expression. So when you come to me again, be thinking of something else every time you say the word dance. You like punching people? When you're telling me how you connect to the music and let it speak through you, Tell me instead about Bladefist. Map that love onto the words coming from your mouth. That is how honest people lie.
Zoe pursed her lips, gave a short nod and returned to her seat.
Nona, you're from the House of Namsis, and you're disgusted that you have to have the peasants on your land resettled if you want to site a hunting lodge on their village. Make me believe your outrage. Go.
The door to the Shade Cavern opened. The mouths of a number of novices did too. You knocked at the poisoner's door, and then you waited. You did not just push on through. The man who walked in had to stoop to avoid cracking his head against the doorframe. He wore white robes.
Inquisitor,
whispered among the class.
Well, girls, Sister Apple pointed Nona back towards her desk. We are honored to have an unexpected visit from a brother of inquiry today.
She turned and raised her head to face the man.
How may we help you, brother?
I am Pelter from Verity's Hall of Questions. I am simply here to observe.
Alata, get Brother Pelter a chair.
Sister Apple indicated a spot by the door.
I prefer to stand.
Pockmarks from some childhood illness marked one side of the man's narrow face. He was perhaps 50. The scrawny length of his neck, the prominence of his throat, and his greying hair, tufting up like the wool of a badly shorn sheep, would have made him comical if not for the brittle blueness of his eyes. Nona felt they were the eyes of a man who had witnessed horrors and approved. She sat, grateful to join the others.
Well, Sister Apple frowned and brought her hands together. Let us return to the art of disguise.
The tall inquisitor set a long-fingered hand to his throat.
I believe you were discussing the business of lying.
He pointed to Nona.
Perhaps the girl could convince me that she is a Sis, a daughter of Elon Namsis, and that she wishes to clear peasants from her lands.
Sister Apple motioned Nona to her feet. Pelter's gaze travelled the length of her, a sharp inspection that made Nona's skin crawl. Beneath her habit, Keot circled away to the small of her back. The Inquisitor's gaze met hers, and she felt something new, a rustling of old memories. The focus moon through the starkness of bare branches, the corridor wind through the wooden bars of a cage. Threadwork. Nona bit down hard, imagining the fist of her will closing around every thread that anchored her to the world and holding them fast. Her glance fell to the man's hands down at his sides now. There was little to betray him, just the slightest twitch of his fingers, but she knew it then. A quantal thread worker running the dirty fingers of his mind through her thoughts. She raised the blackness of her eyes to him and saw a moment's hesitation in his own. The Inquisitor's lip curled, and the tugging on her threads grew stronger, but she held them. Denied, Brother Pelter narrowed his gaze, the blue of his eyes turning to ice like that advancing from north and south to swallow the world. His smile held only winter.
"Come then, girl," he said. "Lie to me."
Chapter 12. None of the novices could tell Nona why the Inquisition had installed itself at Sweet Mercy. Inquisitor Pelter had four watchers with him and placed them in all the classes that he did not personally observe.
Shazal sent them because of Zoe.
Ruli spoke with the total conviction she reserved for all guesswork.
Shazal doesn't own the Inquisition, Ruli.
Jula continued to sew the tear in her habit.
She's prime instigator.
Ara stretched out cat-like across her bed. She patted for Nona to sit on the edge.
That means a lot. When Jacob sold her the role on his way to getting the high priesthood, it was mostly an honorary position. But her archivists dug into the scrolls
and found all manner of associated rites and duties the church seemed to have forgotten about. Nona crossed from the doorway and sat on the end of Ara's bed. She missed moments like this, lying boneless beside Ara after the heat of the baths, complaining together as they wrote essays for academia or spirit class, just spending time. She already felt like an interloper in the grey dormitory. Wincing, she lowered herself slowly. She still had an ache or three from the beating Joelle's friends had dished out.
If Shazal's so hungry for power, why doesn't she set the Inquisition on her brother? Or can't emperors sin?
Ara grinned.
Emperors are famed for their sinning, but be careful where you say it. However, the only place the Inquisition can hold the Lancers to account is in their palaces. All the most highly placed people have rights about where they can and can't be put on trial.
So Shazal should send the Inquisition into Crucicle's throne room?
That's where the Emperor's got clever. Their line is the only one that can refuse admission to the Inquisition. So, unless Crucicle invites them in, the Inquisition can't touch him, Ara said. That's what keeps Shazal's sister, Valera, safe, too.
The Emperor should just disband the Inquisition. I've heard how they get their confessions.
Nona shuddered.
The Inquisition keeps us pure, Jula said. Someone has to see that the faith doesn't slip away from its foundations.
Who keeps them pure?
Nona asked.
Anyway, this isn't about Zol,
Ara said, returning to Ruli's assertion.
This is about the whole thing, the grey and the red.
The Emperor wants control. He wants to send the sisters against his enemies, not have to beg High Priest Nevis. That's what my father says.
The Emperor will be doing the same with the monasteries. They'll have inquisitors up at Narrow Path too, trying to find fault with the abbot. Crucicle will want the Red Brothers and the Grey too.
Nona watched Jula sew, fingers quick, stitches neat and accurate. The tear in her habit had outlasted her memory of what had caused it.
Why would Shazal do anything to help her brother?
Ruli asked, reluctant to let go of her theory.
Wouldn't she take the Red Sisters for herself? The Emperor wouldn't stand for that. His legions would be at her door within the week.
Ara shook her head.
There's been bargaining, a trade.
Shazal will get something she wants, but not Sweet Mercy. Not all of it, anyway.
We should go back to the caves.
Nona reached over to set her fingers to a second tear in Jula's habit.
Who knows how many more chances we'll get if they set watchers on us.
Only Ara acknowledged Nona had spoken.
I don't want to.
The rest carried on as if no words had passed her lips. Much of Nona shared Ara's desire to avoid the caves from now until the moon finally fell from the sky, but other more stubborn parts refused to agree. Shazal had sent the Inquisition into Sweet Mercy, and yet her hands were stained with Hesse's blood, whatever Saphira might claim. Yisht was Shirzal's weapon. She was responsible for what that weapon cut. Nona owed it to Hesse to undertake her own inquisition, to see if her friend had left her any clue or message in the place where she died. Added to this was the fact that Nona had been driven from those caves, fleeing in terror, her friends' minds altered. It was not in her to let such a challenge go unanswered. The ancestor didn't value pride, but Nona had never quite managed to let hers go, and it drew her back to the scene of that disgrace, more strongly with each passing day. And if vengeance and pride were not enough, Yisht had stolen the ship heart, striking at the Abbess's reputation, robbing Sweet Mercy of its most valued treasure, walling its inhabitants away from their magics. It had to be recovered, and where better to start than at the beginning? Nona held silent,
watching the others. It seemed that time was only hardening their denial into fact. Patience would not solve the problem, and in any event, time was running out.
Fix them yourself.
How?
Experiment.
And if something goes wrong?
Peh.
Keot managed to convey an air of complete indifference.
Are you not here to learn? Mistakes are how you learn.
How did this tear?
Nona asked, lifting the sleeve towards Jula.
I caught it on something.
The stitching continued, a little faster, a lot less neat.
I need help, Keot. It needs two people.
I'll help.
Thank you.
But you would have to let me use your body to kill someone.
No.
And who?
Anyone. I don't care. Joelle, if you like.
No.
You weren't so squeamish about Ramel Taxis. You enjoyed it. That's why I'm in you.
Keot sank down her back, burning as he went.
Think about it. Otherwise you'll need two minds for both the silly trances you think you need. Perhaps Joelle will help you.
He settled into a sullen silence. Nona sat back. She needed a friend, and who was there who wasn't sitting before her? Only Armando, and that had been the foolishness of a lonely child. Zol could help, but Nona had no clue where her loyalties lay. Jula had returned to her stitching. Nona watched her, letting her eyes defocus and reaching for her serenity. The lines of the old song ran through her.
She's falling down, she's falling down, the moon, the moon.
She reached for her clarity. Mistress Path had never spoken of entering more than one trance at a time, as if it made no more sense than riding more than one horse at a time. But to Nona, it seemed akin to juggling. The slow and certain motion of Armando's hands filled her mind. She had watched them, with a child's eyes so many years ago that it seemed little more than a dream. And yet, those days and the moments of them were written into her, and no part of them had ever left. To reach clarity, Nona watched a flame, then turned to the shadow and watched the memory of the flames dance. Lacking a flame, she drew only on memory. And now, she ran the song and the dance together, without one tainting the other.
The ice will come, the ice will close, the memory of flame dancing on the darkness to a music all its own. No moon. No moon.
Two hands making their own pattern, catch and throw, exchanging speed and potential.
We'll all fall down, we'll all fall down.
A single petal of flame dancing on a dark ocean.
Soon, too soon.
The song, the dance, the sure hands of a juggler keeping it all in the air. Nona saw the world with new eyes, and through each part of it the path ran, burning and binding. She looked away as Sister Pan had taught her, to the halo, the pale nimbus of threads about each of her friends.
We should go back to the caves.
Her voice sounded impossibly distant, as if she spoke from the bottom of a deep well. But they heard her. She saw it in the aura of thread shrouding each girl.
Something chased us out. We don't run. Not here.
Nona saw how her words pooled on the vast web that connected them all, each to the other, and to everything else too. Saw the vibrations spread, transmit, cross the space between them, and die. She focused her clarity on the place where her words failed to reach Jula.
We should go back.
A tremor. Something knotted. Nona raised her hand, struggling to see the minute detail where the harm had been done. She pulled on a darker thread.
To the caves, jeweler.
She pulled again, and the knot unravelled, momentarily too bright to look upon. Nona understood the Holothor's work now. It had tied a knot in each girl's threads, linking the caves to the very worst and oldest of their fears, so that their minds would step around the memory of the Holothor and everything associated with it, denying it space in their thoughts.
We should go back,
she repeated.
We should!
Jula looked up, her face eager.
What in the ancestors' name was that thing?
We should take knives, swords if we can. Jula seemed perhaps a little too enthusiastic. Nona worried she might have erased rather too much of the fear, or imposed her own desires on her friend. She resolved to use a lighter touch on the others.
Ara, we should go back to the caves. Don't you think so?
Nona struggled to maintain her twin trance, feeling the edges of her serenity slip away as a sense of triumph pushed in.
We'll have to be careful.
Ara was easier to free, the knot more obvious and less tight.
Ruli, don't you think?
Now Nona's clarity was escaping her. The threads fuzzed before her eyes. A headache knifed its way in past her forehead, trying to make a reality of the splitting of her brain in two. Even so, she found the damage done to Ruli's threads and unwound it, not needing such sharp focus now that she had effected the repair twice before.
I don't know,
Ruli hugged herself and shivered.
That thing that chased us! I nearly wet myself when Darla got stuck in front of me at the exit.
Well, think about it.
Nona pressed a hand to her brow and staggered towards the doorway, teeth gritted. The pain made her want to throw up.
Are you all right, Nona?
Ara made to follow her.
Fine.
Nona stumbled out into the hall.
Tired.
By the time she reached the top of the stairs, she was crawling. She managed to get to her feet again for the passage across Mystic Dorm to her bed. She glimpsed Joelle at her bed, knee splinted and bandaged, a walking stick across her lap, then collapsed into her own. Darla looked up from her desk, quill in hand, fingers inky. She said something, but Nona had fallen too far into the black agony of her headache to separate the words. She buried her face into her pillow and vowed never to try threadwork again. The waking bell brought Nona from the confusion of a dream, something to do with spiders and with webs. The first thing she realized as she rolled from beneath her blankets was that her head no longer hurt. The second thing she realized was that the morning would be spent in spirit class with Sister Wheel, and immediately a twinge of the previous night's ache returned.
You're all the colours of the rainbow,
Darla observed as her head re-emerged from the habit she had pulled over it. Nona craned her neck to look down over her shoulder and sighed. The bruising was still deep purple in some places, yellowish green over her hip, faded mauve on her thigh. Across the dormitory, Joelle leaned on her stick, swinging her stiff leg to advance on her desk, where against convent rules she kept a mirror. She spent several minutes each morning brushing her hair in it, and Nona always felt less jealous of how good the girl looked when she remembered the effort Joelle had to put in.
We're going below tomorrow. You in?
Nona looked away from Joelle, now busy with her brush.
Ancestor, I hate spirit class.
Darla shook her head.
Couldn't we just spend the morning working in the laundry instead? Shoveling manure at the vineyard stables would be better.
The Holothor's mark is still on her.
Keote rested across her collarbones. Nona pursed her lips. She wasn't in any hurry to try to untangle the mess Keote's monster had made of Darla's threads. A twinge of the previous night's headache echoed behind Nona's eyes, and in that moment she decided that she would rather face the caves without Darla than undo the Holothor's knot and suffer like that again. Sister Wheel held that novices of mystic class should be awarded the honor of having their spirit lessons before the statue of the ancestor. In practice, this meant standing in the cold and drafty space beneath the dome, rather than sitting in the snug classroom off the foyer. Sister Wheel got to ease the ache in her legs by striding around as she read scripture from her scrolls. The novices had to remain still, their attention on the ancestor's golden face. Today's lesson was different only in two regards. Firstly, Joelle managed to get herself a chair, claiming that Sister Rose had forbidden her from standing until her knee had healed. Secondly, Inquisitor Pelter came to watch, standing at the base of the ancestor statue, as still as the stone behind him, and showing no more expression. Only his eyes moved, studying one novice, then the next.
"The bonds of family are holy," Sister Wheel stalked before them. "The links that bind you to your mother and father are repeated time and again, back through the years. These links form the chains that meet in the ancestor. Each part of that unbroken chain is forged from the divine. A direct connection between you and the origin of all humanity. As the path joins all things, the bonds of family join all people."
The novices stood in four rows of three, so all but two were on the perimeter, any inattention apt to cause an ear to be twisted as Mistress Spirit passed by.
"Why?"
the nun paused at Nona's shoulder.
"Why does Sweet Mercy admit penniless strays from child-takers? Why does Abbess Glass reach into the church's own coffers to pay the confirmation fees for peasants?"
She moved on.
"Because it is a sin that any parent should sell their child. Some might hold that this same sin taints the child themselves, but Abbess Glass points to the convent's own name and shows these children mercy. Also,"
Inquisitor Pelter spoke into the pause,
"a soul child belongs to the church in a way that a wanted child cannot."
Sister Wheel scowled, pressing her lips into a bitter line. She kept her eyes on the novices and resumed her circuit around their perimeter, a sheep hound hemming in her flock.
"The false precedence of the church's claim on children in its care over that of their parents is one of the pillars upon which the foul edifice of the Scythroll heresy stands. It is clearly stated in the Book of the Ancestor that a parent's wishes are prime. The bonds of family, holy as they are, allow any parent to withdraw their child from service at convent or monastery, even if the high priest himself should object. In Scythroll, the church claims a divine right to any child in their care. This is why they must burn, to purify them of their sin. And,"
Inquisitor Pelter slid his narrow voice into another gap,
"it is why Abbess Glass buys girls. She would rather not lose control of trained novices should a father or mother demand their return. She avoids rather than defies the law."
Nona furrowed her brow, keeping her gaze on the face of the ancestor, the golden features so simplified they could belong to anyone. Abbess Glass had always told her she was free to leave, that the convent was a home, not a prison. It seemed that the church might disagree with that assessment. She glanced across at Zol. Of all the mystic class novices, Zol was perhaps the only other soul child. She hadn't been sold to Abbess Glass, though. Shirzal had acquired the girl from the ice. Zol had never seen fit to share the details of that transaction. The lesson continued, Sister Wheel making her predatory circles and droning on relentlessly about the minor differences in the interpretation of scripture that made the Scythroll Church of the Ancestor an unholy evil, worse than the Derns with their pantheon of battle gods, or the raiders off the grey ice who were said to eat babies and wreak untold horrors on their prisoners. Nona occupied herself by studying Joelle. Slipping into the clarity trance, she could see how the fractured bone in Joelle's knee was thread-bound to several areas of the girl's head. Nona lacked the expertise to identify the areas individually, except for the pain center, which was obvious. However, she had little doubt that one of the other areas the injury connected to was memory, and another specialized in revenge. For her part, Joelle returned the inspection, watching Nona with an annoying half-smile. At last, Bray rang out and Sister Wheel released the class. The novices hurried from the dome, trying to rub the chill from their arms.
"Bleed me, that was dull, even for Wheel."
Darla stamped alongside Nona, trying to get some life back into her legs. "She's showing the Inquisitor that we're well educated in the ways of heresy here," Nona said.
"It is surprising," said Zol behind them, "that surrounded by unbelievers on all sides, and even among your own peasantry, so much effort is spent on hunting down and torturing those who agree with your faith almost entirely."
Darla turned around, blinking.
"She speaks!"
"Our faith," Nona said. "Not your faith."
Darla glanced back at the Inquisitor now following in their wake.
"The shrimp's right. Not a good day to be expressing doubts." She frowned.
"Who do you pray to on the ice, then?"
Zoe shrugged. "Any god who answers."
They walked for a moment in silence, aiming for the novice cloister. Nona pursed her lips, then decided to see just how talkative Zol was today.
"It looks as if the Abbess is going to let you on the ice ranging."
Zol shrugged again. "Are you going to run, if she does?"
"Run?"
Zol shot Nona a dark, unreadable look.
"Back to your tribe?" "Would you run with me, Nona Grey?"
Zol asked.
"I am told that the Chosen One should not abandon her shield."
"To your tribe?" Nona couldn't help smiling at the thought.
"Or to yours?" Zol said. "But I thought you had murder in mind. Revenge. A ship heart to recover."
The smile left Nona as quickly and as involuntarily as it had come. "Of all the things that lay beyond the rock, whether it be in the corridor or on the ice, Yisht was the one that called to her. Yisht's blood, waiting to be spilled."
"We will visit the ice together, Nona," Zol said. "I will show you another world, and how to live in it."
Nona met the Ice Triber's gaze, surprised.
"I'd like that."
And for the briefest moment, she could swear she saw a smile tug at Zol's lips. In the novice cloister, Nona sat with her friends from Grey Class. Darla came over too, but wandered off when talk turned to the caves.
"What's up with her?"
Ara frowned at Darla's broad and departing back. "The creature in the caves did the same to all of you. It's threadwork. The fear it put in us knotted something up in your heads. It was supposed to stop any of us coming back. It was something deeper than fear. You couldn't even hear me talk about the caves."
"That's not true,"
Ruli trailed off, echoing Ara's frown.
"Is it?"
"It is. I saw the damage it did."
Nona bit off any further explanation, not wanting to explain how she avoided the same fate.
"Why hasn't it worn off with Darla?" Jula asked.
Nona shrugged. Explaining what she'd done would just invite more questions.
"Maybe it takes longer when you're that big."
The wind swirled hard for a moment, whipping up dead oak leaves and making the girls shield their faces. Seconds later the squall passed, the ice wind returning to its steady north-south roaring.
"Ketty won't talk about it either," Ruli said.
"Maybe she's got boy fever again," Nona shrugged.
"So, tomorrow then?"
"Yes,"
Ara nodded.
"I'm not going without a spear," Ruli said. "A knife, at the least."
"I'll bring you a knife," Nona said.
"At last, She wants to kill something. And what she chooses to cut cannot bleed.
Give me a better plan, then, Nona demanded, but Keot fell back into his silence.
Is this sensible? Is it worth it? Jula asked. What if it's got teeth as big as my arm? Weren't there bodies in that cave?
Dozens of them, Ara said. Nona's gaze found Joelle across the cloister amid a circle of her friends, almost hidden behind the trunk of the center oak. This is the Rock of Faith. The cave that thing was in is practically beneath this convent. In 4 years, we could be Red Sisters. If we don't even dare explore the holes under where we live, what use are we going to be out in the world?
She bit her lip, remembering their escape. Besides, if it were some monstrous creature, what does it eat? Flooding your prey with fear so that it runs away and never returns isn't a very good strategy for filling your belly. This thing seems more like a stink fox to me, spraying its foulness to scare intruders off.
But the bodies, Jula said.
I saw skeletons, Nona said, trying to see them again. Covered in flowstone like the ones in the niche. They had to be centuries old. I saw all kinds of horrible things.
Ara pressed the heel of her hand to her forehead. They couldn't all be true.
So maybe none of them were? Nona nodded. Even if the thing was as big as a bear and had teeth like swords, she needed to see where Hesse died. With the ship part so close, Hesse might have worked miracles. There could be a clue, missed by the nuns but waiting for one who was thread-bound to her. And with threadwork, you start at the beginning.
We're going, then?
Ara and Ruli nodded. Jula frowned, then nodded too.
I hear you're up for the Shade Trial, Ara said, breaking the mood with a grin.
Yes. Nona glanced back towards Joelle's clique with narrowed eyes.
No chance.
Ruli shook her head.
What?
Nona turned her stare on Ruli. The girl held her hands up.
I'm just the messenger.
She's right, Nona. There's no way Joelle will let you get to that tree. Jula shook her head.
Even if they liked you, they wouldn't go hungry just to let you pass. And you're not hard to spot.
I can put on a headscarf or something. Nona found her voice raised and struggled to push her outrage back.
I'm not useless.
Can you put a shadow on too? Ara offered an apologetic smile.
And it'll take more than a headscarf. Suleri went in with a long white beard, warts, and a cast in one eye. They challenged her before she got halfway to the tree.
She overdid it, Nona sniffed. Less is more.
Well, Ruli grinned, you've certainly got a lot of that.
She rolled back under the swinging slap Nona aimed her way and ran off shrieking with laughter. Nona stood to give chase, then stopped, reminded by a dozen bruises that perhaps sitting back down would be better. She tried to imagine crossing Faber Square with all of Mystic Class on the watch for her. She let her gaze rest on the skeletal forest of the center oak's branches, leaves tight-wrapped against the ice.
I'm lost, aren't I?
Ara nodded.
It's not like you wanted the grey. Just punch your way to the pine and claim it as a spoil of war.
Chapter 13. Nona buttoned her range coat tight and hurried from the refectory, still chewing on a heel of bread. Ara, Ruli, and Jula were waiting for her to join them on the Seren Way, ready to dare the Holothor's cave once more, and she was already late.
Novice!
A nun, black against the sun where it rose between Blade and Heart Halls, called to her.
Walk with me,
Sister Apple's voice. Shielding her eyes, Nona hurried over. Mistress Shade? Sister Apple motioned with her head and led off across the square,
Nona followed, bowed against the ice wind, and hoping she wouldn't be kept too long. On reaching the shelter of the steps down to the shade classroom, Sister Apple turned and beckoned Nona closer, so she too would be out of the wind. "Your shade trial will be next week, Nona."
"Next week? I'm not ready."
Nona's mind started to race. She could get a Mensa's houseguard uniform from Terra. And it has been decided that it will be held here, in the convent.
"But Thabor Square is..."
"Too dangerous. We will use the novice cloister and put the puzzle box up the center oak." "I'm sorry, Nona."
"The cloister?"
Nona tried to picture it.
"That's madness. Everyone there is in a habit. We all know each other. The defenders would just challenge any stranger. Not that I can make myself look like a stranger in a habit."
"Even so,
I've no chance. This was Wheel, wasn't it? She's always hated me."
Nona hardly felt Keote burn across her tongue, rising with her rage.
"Wheel and that bitch Rail. Revenge for Joelle. Namsis's money bought and paid for this."
Sister Apple's slap rocked Nona on her heels, setting the side of her face aflame. She had been too deep in her outrage to see the blow coming, which, even as she raised her hand to her cheek, Nona realized was a good thing. If she had seen the blow and blocked it, some unwritten rule would have been shattered, and Nona's exit from the convent would have been a likely consequence.
"I made the decision."
Sister Apple fixed Nona with a hard stare.
"Saphira told you the Noi Guin still want their revenge. Do you want Kettle and the other sisters out in Verity risking themselves so you can take the trial?"
Her voice turned from angry to bitter.
"It's not as if you stand a chance. You cut off your own shadow, Nona. You cut yourself off from the shade. The grey isn't for you."
Sister Apple turned and unlocked the gate. She locked it behind her and a moment later descended into the caves, leaving Nona standing before the steps, too full of conflicting thoughts and emotion to do anything but stand some more.
"Thought you weren't coming."
Ruli stepped out into the track from where she had been sheltering with Ara and Jula. It's hard to slip away with inquisitors all over the convent. Nona had crept out quite easily, but that had been quick feet and luck. Mainly luck. Ruli nodded.
"I walked the shadows with Ara."
The other two emerged behind her. Ruli only had a touch of Marjal, half-blood at most, but she showed a talent for shadow work.
"Jula just strolled out. The Inquisition know how holy she is and don't bother with her."
Jula snorted at that.
"Did you bring a weapon?"
Nona pulled out the knife they'd discovered on their last exploration. Ara frowned at it.
"That's the same as before. You know, the one they tried to assassinate you with. It's Noi Guin."
"It's the same as the shadow-poisoned one that got stuck in Kettle," Nona said. "One very persistent assassin. 3 knives. I must have hurt their pride by surviving."
"Do you think the monster scared the Noi Guin away too?"
Ruli shivered, then hugged herself as if to show it was just the wind.
"I'm guessing so."
Nona put the knife back inside her habit.
"What did you bring?"
"Half a quarterstaff."
Ara reached back into the crevice they'd been waiting in.
"I guess that's an 1/8 staff."
Nona grinned. She recognized it as one she'd broken when Joelle's friends caught her.
"I got a hammer from the cooper's stores."
Ruli let it slip from her sleeve into her hand.
"This?"
Jula sheepishly produced a frying pan.
"It's all I could get."
"And Sister Cole won't beat you as hard if she catches you stealing from the kitchen, as Sister Taller would if she caught you stealing from blade stores."
Nona nodded.
"Are we being stupid here?"
Ara frowned at her broken staff.
"There's a monster down there we know nothing about, and Jula has a frying pan."
"Maybe." Nona put her knife in Jula's other hand and folded her fingers around the hilt. "But they're going to send us out into the world soon enough, and we'll be expected to deal with whatever we find.
if we can't even face up to something on our own doorstep, under our own doorstep, what use are we? She flexed her hands and brought the floor blades into existence, shimmering briefly. And I brought my own weapons. The fissure waited for them as it had always waited, hidden before there were people to hide from. Ara led the way into the corridor, lantern held high. The entrance held that faint rankness of old bones, damp stone, and rotting vegetation. A few dozen yards took them past the point where even the most shade-loving plant could cling to survival using whatever light bled through the entrance, and soon the only smell was that of wetness on rock. They retraced their steps, a familiar route now, none of them speaking. Nona felt the weight of stone above her, the walls pressing in, the heavy silence. In places their footsteps echoed, elsewhere an emptiness, like that of the ancestors' dome, swallowed the sound.
"I've worked out why I like this place so much," Jula said.
Nona looked back from her inspection of the long scramble up towards the chamber with the three exits.
"Yes?" "It's the wind."
"There isn't any."
"Yes, and it's not just that. There's no wind inside at the convent. But you can always hear it. Here, there's nothing."
"Serenity now." Nona let the lines of the children's song run through her head. "It will work. That girl at the academy tried to make me run with her shadows. Serenity kept them from me."
"She's fallen down. She's fallen down."
Nona muttered the words beneath her breath, and her serenity rose around her like the sides of a deep well. Beside her, Ara, Ruli, and Jula each walked their own path into the serenity trance.
"Let's go."
Ara began to climb. 10 minutes later, the tunnel that led to the Holothor and its cave of horror yawned before them. Ara walked on without a word. Nona and Jula followed, Ruli at the rear.
"I can feel it." Nona's skin prickled as if 1,000 eyes watched her from the dark.
"It can feel you."
Keoth rose across the back of her neck like a scald, and her anger rose with him. Darker emotions, too, palpable through the thick velvet wrapping of her serenity.
"Me too."
Ruli sounded calm, almost sleepy. The light from Ara's lantern reached out across stone walls smoothed by ancient waters. Thick, glistening deposits of limescale coated every surface, like treacle frozen in mid-flow, somehow organic, as if they were advancing down the gullet of some vast beast. Nona wore her serenity as if it were a protective bubble, extending yards past the reach of her arms, beyond even the limits of their illumination, with the fear pushing at its borders a distant thing. Ahead, shapes loomed among the shifting shadows, the rock-bound skeletons of the Holothor's victims. The four girls pressed tight together, calm, but seeking the comfort of one another's warmth and a side from which attack would not come. The ancient night of the cave began to roll back before the lantern's advance, leaving calcified skeletons behind like rocks revealed by retreating waves. Shadow swung.
"It's coming,"
a whisper. Nona felt it, like a squall racing across the flatness of open fields, something big, something vast that would carry her off. The walls seemed to pull away, the touch of her friends fade to nothing. Every fear she owned hurtled towards her out of the night at terrifying speed. Then it struck. The bubble of her serenity collapsed in less than a heartbeat, from something wide and confident to the thinnest skin molded to her body with the Holothor's unclean touch, scratching dry-fingered across every inch. In a moment, Nona hung high above herself, seeing her body in the small patch of illumination, a tight circle around her, and beyond that, an endless void both wholly empty and full of implacable hate.
"Run!"
It wasn't Keote's command that set Nona turning to flee. It was the sound of running feet. The sound of being abandoned. She glimpsed Ruli's white face stretched into a scream, horror in every line. Jula shrieking, dropping her knife as she started to run. Ara crashing into the nearest wall as she ran blind. The terror breached Nona's barriers and flooded through her. She tore off after Ruli, Keote demanding she run faster. Ruli leapt Ara's sprawled body. Nona followed. Ara's collision with the wall had left her on the ground, blonde hair fanned around her head, one arm stretched out as if pointing the way.
Run!
Keote fled into her eyes, and suddenly the passage ahead revealed itself to her, as if the stone itself were glowing with a reddish light. Nona got 5 more steps, each slower than the last, before Jula overtook her, habit flapping.
Run!
The voice that filled her brain rang with terror as the Holothor's fear infected even the devil.
It's an old one! Too powerful!
She's my friend! The words brought Nona to a halt, as effectively as a rope about her neck. She turned. Ara moved her head, groaning, the lantern lying on its side close to her hip. Keote retreated from her eyes, unwilling to see what followed them.
Take the lantern and run!
Nona took one step back towards Ara, then another, bowed as if braving a headwind. It wasn't that her fear had gone, simply that a greater one drove her. The thought of Ara's bones lying with the rest, slowly devoured by stone, a constant silent accusation that the foundation of her own existence lay as hollow as the rock of faith.
No!
A whisper. Trembling in each limb, Nona stepped over Ara for a second time and faced the darkness.
No!
A shout. She stood in an invisible wind. At the back of her head, Keote hung, bleeding out into the air, trying to free himself from her skin and flee back to the path. The intensity built. The cave's empty night reverberated with it. Skins of stone shattered from the walls. Warm blood ran from Nona's eyes and nose. She sank to her knees beneath the weight of it, every nerve screaming to run. The rocks around her began to bleed. An awful rasping breath shuddered through the blackness. And out there, a howling hate, condensing. A darker clot of night. The stench of decay surrounded her. Screams of pain worse than the Avis had made when they'd burned her. A novice emerged into the trembling illumination, thin limbs, rotting skin, dragging a withered leg, lifting up her face. Hessa.
Run!
No!
A whisper. And suddenly, the fear blew out. From one moment to the next, it had gone. The darkness was again just darkness. Nona fell forward onto all fours and vomited everything she had in her. Jula and Ruli came back, patting their way along the walls. They emerged pale-faced into the light to find Ara kneeling by Nona, holding Nona's hair back as she wiped drool from her mouth.
Where is it?
Ruli bent to pick up the hammer she had dropped. It shook in her hand.
Gone, I think.
Nona spat and rose to her knees.
What does she mean? Where is it?
Keote sounded weak, distant. He shivered over the very surface of her skin.
She means, where is it?
That was it. Holothur have nothing so primitive as flesh.
I think it's gone.
Nona helped Ara up, raising her fingers to the scrape on Ara's forehead.
You're all right? You should see the other girl.
Ara managed a grin. It was an old joke.
I see what you mean.
Jula tapped her frying pan to the wall where Ara had collided with it, and more layers of stone cracked away. Ara scooped up the lantern.
Come on.
She led them back.
Where are all the bones?
Ara held the lantern high. The cavern floor lay clear of anything but rocks and stalagmites. Further back, something large and circular loomed.
Were the skeletons?